Outside, the long version, January 31st, 1998. Stay tuned for interviews with Felicia Abuda of Palo Alto on the new crackdown on the homeless in that city, San Jose, with Gary Wood, community activist, talking about the community tribunal, which is happening there to deal with grand jury discrimination. And that the whole community is coming together. Plus our own Santa Cruz sleeping ban controversy, which is heating up to white-hot temperatures as of Monday, when the actual language discussion of the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban ordinance will hopefully be happening at the task force meeting. Stay with us.
I haven't prepared a speech, so please forgive me if I'm a little bit unclear, but I was homeless from August of 96 to August of 97, and had my son, who's now 15 months old, in October of 97, and lived in my vehicle, which was broken down, didn't work, and I am now working to try and get me more to sleep in San Francisco. And I'm here to ask if there's anything that you all can do to endorse that effort. I'm especially concerned that one of the citizens speaking to the city council recently was concerned that any lifting of the camping ordinance, especially the sleeping, what I'm concerned is the sleeping section of the camping ordinance, she was concerned that that might cause rape if it was legal to sleep. And so I would like to testify as a woman who was more susceptible to more susceptible by living in a vehicle and having it be illegal to sleep. And now with my child, I'm glad I'm not still out there. I was pregnant at the time. And I don't mean that it's not as unjust for men as well. but that's what I'm here for tonight, is to encourage you, if there's anything that can be done to make it safer for women who do not have homes in this community, to at least able to sleep safely at night without being criminalized. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura.
And that was Laura Tucker, homeless activist, homeless mom, now she's in housing, formerly board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, speaking before the Commission on the Prevention of Violence Against Women last week. A nice introduction to what's coming up this week on Wednesday evening at City Hall, around about 7:30 or 8, I'm not sure where on the agenda it's going to be. There will be an opportunity to talk about the sleeping ban and its impact on violence against women. And I had a chat with the staff person, Lori, for the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, and told her some of my thoughts, what I'd heard regarding the issue. There are some people who are legitimately concerned about harassment of women from many sectors of society, male sectors of society, where single women or even women in groups get abused, taunted, sexually harassed, raped, and there is an apprehension in some quarters that this is particularly prevalent among homeless people. I've never seen any statistics to show this. There's also an apprehension that homeless women are particularly vulnerable to harassment from homeless and housed men, and that somehow if you lift the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban, which is now being considered by the Santa Cruz City Council Subcommittee Task Force, that this is going to increase the risk to homeless women because homeless men will be able to sleep outside with less fear of arrest from the police. I'm going to be talking about this issue on Wednesday night, and I haven't quite fully formed my thoughts yet, but a number of points have come up that seem to me relevant. First, women themselves who sleep outside have to hide from the police. I guess this point has already been made by Laura Tucker. If you have to hide from the police department, then you can't get much protection from them because you can't sleep in the areas that are patrolled by them, and they will presumably be less likely to be targeted by those who are predators and preying on women. That's a point one. Point two would be you can't go to the police directly to seek assistance in the event of problems, or you're less likely to do so if you have warrants for camping tickets out because you're afraid that they will come up and you'll be harassed or jailed even by the police for those warrants, who are just doing their job. The police are just doing, we hear this refrain endlessly from the Santa Cruz Police Department around this issue. A third point that I feel is really true, although you don't hear it much these days, it used to be, I think, more prevalent community wisdom, that when there are more eyes on the street, there is really more protection for everyone, including homeowners. So if there actually are homeless people parked on the street, or even crouched in doorways on the street, which I don't particularly recommend, but which can happen, you're going to have a situation where there is more people watching and less likelihood of stranger assault on women. Although, again, the usual most assaults, of course, happen, and this is the fourth point, between people who know each other. I'm going to let someone join this conversation. We have an incoming call, and if you want to join us, you can join us at 427-3772 on Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's what you're tuned to at 96.3.
Hi there. You're on the air with Bathrop Spear Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is Laura calling.
Well, hi, Laura. How are you doing?
I was listening and thinking about a couple of points that I wished that I had made, of course.
Well, you have another opportunity on Wednesday at City Hall, I guess.
Yeah.
On February 3rd.
I thought I would interrupt all of your points there, too, to see if, what I was thinking was being afraid that rape is going to go up if homeless people are able to sleep at night is pretty much equivalent to saying that if you are a rapist, you're more likely to be homeless, or if you are homeless, you're more likely to be a rapist. It's really kind of a classist slur, you know, to say that homeless people are are a rapist.
Uh-huh.
And I will speak to them, and one of the things I would like to say to them is that I stood in line at the soup kitchen every day and did not feel afraid of the community of homeless people. And it also gets me to thinking about, now this is kind of before my time, I actually was living here at the time but not paying too much attention to the newspapers as I usually don't, but of this officer who was accused of molesting women.
Are you thinking of Sergeant Butchie Baker?
I didn't want to say his name because I wasn't sure it was him, but I thought I had heard it was Butch Baker, and I can't remember how many women were...
I believe it was at least 7, probably 10, maybe more, and actually these were complaints that were brought forward by reputable attorneys like Ben Rice and Margaret Marr, who are part of the coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board.
And were these women that were working with him, or they were arrested by him?
They were either arrested by him or investigated by him, I believe.
Okay, so that doesn't make me feel real secure as a homeless person.
It should be said that, let me interrupt you for a moment, Laura, it should be said that Baker was exonerated by the Internal Affairs Department of the Santa Cruz Police Force, by the District Attorney's Office, and I believe by the State Attorney General's Office.
Well, that doesn't make me feel very secure. Personally, now, this may be very biased, but that doesn't make me feel very secure about the District Attorney's Office.
Now, wait a minute. Are you telling me you don't trust Art Danner, Chief Belcher, and actually been Chief Bassett?
To be honest,
and
I've
State
never
Attorney
felt very...
Dan Lundgren? I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah. I've actually never felt very secure about the District Attorney's Office.
How could that be? You're obviously a paranoid schizophrenic.
Well, paranoia is an unjust fear.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I'm in a rush, so that's kind of why I called and interrupted you. I did want to hear all your points and whatnot, but
I don't mean
in the shower.
Okay, well, please call back again once you've cleaned off.
Okay.
Thank you, Laura.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, you know, as I said during my last show, Sergeant Butchie Baker, nice enough guy, it seems, these days, Lauren Baker, as he's officially known, he shows up with Deputy Chief Locke for the task force for the examine the camping ordinance, which supposedly meets twice a week, has actually been meeting sporadically, depending on the preferences of Catherine Byers, the mayor. He shows up and he does the friendly routine, and perhaps he is friendly. You know, as I said before, I don't know of a lot of complaints about him recently. I have heard one complaint which involved a home invasion by the police, and that was several years ago, and I've been kind of waiting to hear about more from Sergeant Baker. If anybody has positive or negative things to say about Sergeant Baker, please give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 at 427-3772. I definitely feel that there is a significant cloud hanging over Baker's reputation based on what happened in 1990, 91, and 92, not just around harassment of women, but also around harassment of homeless people. He is notorious for his three tickets in one night against Norman Gross, or Stormin' Norman, as we used to call him, a homeless man who was somewhat slow, just to be accurate. Who stayed out of the 8.5-month-long homeless vigil in front of the post office back in 1990 when that was being held. And Baker was kind of notorious. He also went after people in the bushes at the city hall in 1990 when there was a protest there. He was famous for his expeditions at that time, but again, that was 9 years ago. And if Baker has changed his practices, then he should be credited with that. I think one should encourage people, police officers and anyone else, to change their behavior, and when they do, we should give them credit for it. So I'd like to know if people have had good or bad experiences with Sergeant Baker, who, by the way, was promoted to sergeant and declared Man of the Year within a year or two after this incredible scandal broke, where there was no real resolution of it as far as I'm concerned. The city council started a subcommittee to investigate it, but eventually dumped the subcommittee, actually within a month or two dumped it because of pressure from, I presume, business and police groups. I don't know exactly who they specifically were, but they didn't pursue that investigation to come up with any conclusions instead, and they did no independent investigation. They just left it in the hands of then-Chief Bassett, who was the head of the police department in Santa Cruz, while Belcher was still the deputy chief. So, again, we're talking about the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women hearing that's coming up on Wednesday. We're hoping that they're going to endorse repealing the sleeping in blanket sections of the camping ordinance and other protections, too, for homeless people. That is going to become a very hot topic as early as tomorrow at 4 o'clock. It's been a hot topic for years with a lot of this, but it'll actually hit the City Council Task Force on Monday, and they'll actually start talking about the language if three council members show up. Byers has been kind of coy about that, saying we can't talk with two members. I can't understand why that is, but I guess we must be patient and want to have everybody on board. Let's see what this caller thinks about that.
Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. I'd like to know, what's the thing about Baker?
I mean, if it was he innocent or was he guilty?
Well, he wasn't accused of a specific crime. In other words, like the district attorney's office did not investigate him for or file a charge against him. There were a number of women who came forward and said that he had improperly touched them and searched them and harassed them, if you will, in the course of investigations. The first one was a homeless woman named Sarah, who I remember because I interviewed her myself, and then three attorneys who were concerned about police review, about there being an independent group to look at the police department's conduct, held a press conference with three of those women and demanded that City Council take some action. City Council then, it was in the summer of 1992, established a subcommittee to look into it, but the subcommittee never filed any report, and they simply kind of adjourned, and the City Council didn't do anything about the issue. As I said, the police department's internal affairs department found that they couldn't sustain any complaints against Baker. The district attorney's office, it was either the district attorney's office or the grand jury, I'm not sure which, took no action against Baker, and the state attorney general's office said that they couldn't take any action against him. And the next year he was declared officer of the year, and within a year he was promoted to sergeant.
So no one investigated it?
Well, you know, I mean, the internal affairs department, the police department, and the district attorney's office, or the grand jury, and the state attorney general's office all, quote, held investigations. The problem is that those are police agencies that one doesn't necessarily feel confident with because they aren't really that independent. You know, I mean, I didn't feel comfortable with that. I would have preferred to see some investigation by the city council or by some independent group, and none of that really happened.
Mm. Oh, so that's why there was the police review board, right?
Well, the police review board, you know, eventually, you know, came on board several years later, but was sort of kind of crippled from birth because it lacks significant power to do any kind of disciplinary power over the police department. It doesn't have regular independent investigations. In fact, it's never held an independent investigation in all the 5 years of its existence. It's never held a public hearing, for instance. It has public meetings, but it holds all its investigations in private, and what it usually does is it takes the reports of the police department's internal investigation and just looks at them. It may ask a question or two of the police department, but it has never subpoenaed a witness, it has never held a public hearing, which it can do, and it has never held an early investigation, which can be important, for example, in the case of police shootings, because what happens when an officer shoots someone, usually it gets tied up in court for months, or
yes.
Are
you under the assumption that they cover things up, or?
It's not, I don't like to make assumptions. I think it's important that we simply look at what happens. A lot of us were concerned that the Internal Affairs Department of the police, I was particularly concerned about how they treated complaints against homeless people. I've seen homeless people abused. I've filed complaints. And what you used to get back from the police department was a one-line page. We've examined your complaint and it has no basis. And, you know, there was nothing beyond that. It was almost like a form. It wasn't even individually, you know, addressed to you. So we pushed for some kind of Citizens Police Review Board, but they, of course, we've seen them essentially declining to deal with cases of police misconduct. I mean, the most obvious one was the Happy John Dine shooting, where, you know, one can believe that Officer Carey, when he killed Dine, you know about the case?
Yeah.
You know, might have been an error, might have shot hastily, but the stories are peculiar because they're contradictory. The original police stories that came out, which Chief Belcher and DA Art Danner ratified within hours, Belcher within hours, Danner within a couple of days, after the shooting, was that Dine had a weapon in his hand that he, you know, which they say was turned out to be a toy weapon, that he was pointing at a police officer, that he was in a threatening pose, and he was also in a combat position, and that it was visible. We talked, every non-police witness we spoke to didn't see that. They didn't see a weapon in his hand. They didn't see him threatening the police. They didn't see him in a combat position. So there was clear contradictory testimony.
I see you making a lot of your accusations, but what do you think would help?
I would have preferred to see an independent investigation of that.
So you want independent investigations on everything, or what?
Well, particularly on you know, police shootings. I think that's really important. And I think, you know, the difficulty when police are dealing with homeless people, you have a situation where it's really a license for abuse if they want to abuse them, you know. And the police often are put in a difficult position because they are told by the merchants, they are told by the city council. In essence, they don't say it in those terms, but get them out of here, you know. Get them, we don't want these people downtown. We don't want them around. And, you know, the pressure is on them to do something there. And in some cases, there are individual officers who kind of like doing this kind of thing. I mean, we have observed this, and sometimes this is not because a man is a bad human being, but because when you put on a uniform and a badge, it gives you a kind of power that sometimes is corrupting.
Yeah, but what would you do? What would you suggest for somebody like me, who is a mother and has children and will not go downtown? Because I feel I always get harassed, you know, and it's scary to my children. So I just won't go downtown. So,
I don't think you should be in that position. I certainly wouldn't want you to be in that position. Tell me a little bit about this. When was the last time you went downtown?
Well, I avoid downtown whenever possible. I just don't like to shop down there because I always get asked for money and they get in my children's face and the children get real scared and so I end up usually giving them money just to get them, you know, away from us.
Now, the last time this happened was?
Oh, real recently. It's just all the time.
So you went down there like this month sometime and it happened to you?
Yeah.
And where did this happen?
My kids love to go to Marini's because of the Beanie Baby thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's around there.
Around the coffee roasting company, yeah. Marini's area.
Yeah. I just, you know, I feel real compassionate for the homeless people, but then again, I know from a mom's point of view that I just don't want to be around it. Because I don't like to be harassed.
And can you tell me kind of specific, what was it, spare change, that sort of thing? Or?
Well, yeah, and, you know, talking to the kids and stuff, and they're just scared of them. And, you know, I would love to treat the homeless a certain way, but I would love to have the kids, you know, be able to give to the homeless. And
was this a person who was intoxicated or not intoxicated, or just was this? Remember, there are different groups of people. You know, some people are on the streets but not homeless. Some people are. I mean, I'm not. You know, no one should harass you. I mean, on the other hand, we do live in a, you know, in a modern situation where there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people, and, you know, people are, some people are in trouble. They're looking for money, and they're not afraid to ask for it. They certainly shouldn't be harassing you.
Yeah.
On the other hand, to expect that, you know, it's going to be like it's an urban scene, really. I mean, Santa Cruz used to be less this way, but, you know, this is 1999.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate because I would love to go downtown and give them my business, but I don't know. Wasn't there something along the lines where you bought, like, something for the homeless and it actually was going to the homeless or something, some kind of certificate?
Yeah, they had several programs. One was called Food for All, another was called Above the Line that was working on this youth shelter out in the county. And then there was, of course, you can always give money directly to the Homeless Community Resource Center. And I have to admit, I'm not a woman. I'm not a mom with two kids, you know, so I cannot be in your shoes. The woman who called before, did you hear the woman Laura Tucker calling before, talking
no.
on the air? She's actually a mom with an infant, but she's been homeless herself a lot, and now she's you know, in housing, and she's quite articulate about it. And I would love, if she's listening, to have her talk to your concerns, because she really faces your concerns in a much more direct way than I do. I'm a tall guy, you know, with a beard, and I'm less likely, I don't know how tall you are, how tough looking you are.
Not that tough.
You know, but, you know, I think to some extent, I mean, I believe in civil rights for people on the streets. I really do. I think,
but I'm just saying that I feel comfort when I do see the policeman downtown, knowing that, you know, that there's always that option to scream or something.
Sure, so. I have no problem with, I think police officers should be patrolling. You know, I got no problem with that. What I don't want them to do is to be running people out. That bothers me. I want them to be available for you. If someone comes up and says, hey, give me some money, you know, something like that, in a way that's intimidating or threatening, I think you should immediately have a recourse to walk over to police and say, officer, I feel this man's behavior is inappropriate. It's threatening. I acknowledge it threatened me. I'm afraid it's going to threaten the next person. I want to file a complaint. And for you to do that, I think, is completely suitable if you're in a situation where that's happened.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I don't know if I satisfied that caller. It's easier, obviously, for me to talk about it than for someone necessarily to do it, particularly when you have a tight schedule and a child to take care of.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, it's me again.
Laura Tucker. Maybe you can talk, maybe our caller who just called is listening in. You can tell her what you think.
Well, I just got out of the shower, so I didn't hear all of her call. What I did hear is very, no specific details or information. The same rhetoric of, I refuse to shop downtown because of those bums. And
she didn't use the word bums.
Well, I'm a little upset because I would appreciate it if people called up and told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously she has been downtown recently, she says, just happened recently, but she doesn't go down there anymore, and she wouldn't say who it was or what it was. And really what it is it's this threat to the business community that if you don't do something about the element, then we're not going to give you our business. And I have been living in Santa Cruz for 10 years. I'm, well-dressed and sober and, I don't look like a homeless person. And I wonder why I never get harassed. I can't remember the last time I was even asked for change. And I live downtown, so I walk down there all the time. I'm constantly downtown, and I look like a shopper. Actually, I am a shopper now. And so why is it that these people, I just really have a hard time believing her story. But I would be happy to talk to her because I feel like it's important for the residential community to meet people that actually are homeless, because they also have a hard time distinguishing them, I think, sometimes from people who are housed and maybe are causing problems down there. But I don't really feel like I see a lot of that. It may be, and I'm just speculating, that she has a certain breed of person that she wants to see downtown. She wants to see them dressed a certain way and looking a certain way. And, if they happen to be not fitting her standards of, then, it may be that she just does not want to, she doesn't want to look. She doesn't want to see somebody that's maybe wearing clothes that she wouldn't wear, or has their hair, maybe men with long hair.
She wasn't talking about how people appeared. She was
talking
about particular behavior that she was concerned about changing.
She gave no specific information, and you asked her repeatedly.
She did say that her children were frightened. She may have said by the appearance. You know what I'm going to suggest here, Laura? I'm going to suggest that if...
I'll give my phone number if she'd like to call.
Sure, okay.
It's 459-0837.
Again, to anyone who's interested in, who has this concern about being harassed downtown or has this perception, particularly the previous caller, if you'd like to call Laura, she's at 459-0837. And there's a possibility of having some kind of off-air communication and conversation. And, of course, you're invited to call back, caller, if you have some response to what Laura's perceptions are. And, Laura, I don't mean to cut you off either.
I'm just tired of being prejudiced, against.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really tired of being called, she didn't call me any names, but this thing of us being, thieves and rapists and bums and drunks, and it's really, this is an unjust law that affects a wide spectrum of people.
You're talking about the law that makes it illegal to sleep at night?
Yeah, and this thing of, I really would like to treat the homeless a certain way, but... And then this bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think it is paranoia. That is to say, unjustified apprehension.
Well, it's also, accusing, it's taking a large section of the public and putting them in this very small box that says, they're all panhandlers and hanging out downtown harassing my children.
Mm-hmm.
And I really honestly question how often that she gets hassled when she goes downtown. And I also question that I don't think that she doesn't shop downtown. But, I don't know. Maybe she doesn't. Who knows?
Who knows, indeed. Well, I'm hoping that you and she will both show up at the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women and talk this one out, because we need, you know, to talk it out. We don't need the laws and the cops here dealing with this stuff. Although, I mean, I told her if she...
Well, there are laws. There's laws against a lot of things, and there's laws against being drunk in public or harassing children. There's, you know, there's as well as other laws that people are concerned with, like trespassing and littering, drunk in public. We have those laws already.
Uh-huh.
And that's what our police are there for, is to enforce those laws.
Uh-huh.
But we don't need to make it illegal for people to sleep.
Oh,
I don't know, I missed the first part of the conversation, so I don't even know what your subject is.
No, we were talking about, actually I was talking about Sergeant Butchie Baker. She wondered what the actual accusations were. She felt possibly, she didn't say this, but perhaps she feared he was being unfairly criticized.
Well, that's possible, because the charges were dropped or something. I mean, I don't know what happened. But nine women did complain, so that's got to make you kind of scratch your head.
Somewhere between 7 and 10 is what I got, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that does make you kind of go, you know.
Yeah, right. It's true, and it could all be baseless.
I mean, did these women know each other? Were they separate complaints that were isolated?
They didn't know each other.
Well, that really makes you wonder, you know.
Right.
So it sounds like a bunch of bullshit rhetoric to me, but if she wants to call, then I'll try and contain myself.
Okay. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My mom's a feminist, so I understand. That's why I'm here today. I've come to find out. I was raised on equal rights, and furthermore, she helped me see that equality is a goal worth fighting for.
Thank you, guys.
I put into the melody song. You will know what time is all around. And let me make the film before the show. I thought of wheeling it down the hall to turn in the young man call. But I hope that must be heavy, I know. I've been looking forward.
Kristen Lems, my mom's a feminist, and we're on the line with Hans. Hi, Hans.
Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Good. So you've been listening to the show, eh?
Yeah. I was on the phone, actually, on hold, and I was listening to Free Radio, and I was hearing your last two callers, and I was going to say the first caller who called in with the children that are afraid of the homeless and things,
uh-huh.
I think... You know, rather than, you know, saying, oh, she's calling people's name and she's one side and all that, maybe a, an approach for her would be to, you know, take her children aside and explain, you know, these people don't have a home, and, you know, for some reason this is their thing, and they, you know, they're not, you know, necessarily something to be afraid of, but maybe if she could explain it a little more, you know, because I could understand that being a scary situation for a small child.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't know, I just thought that might, maybe help her out a little bit, you know, cause, and like she said, that, you know, she says she'd like to help out, and then she should, you know.
Yeah, I think everybody knows that people who are really poor, who are homeless for different reasons, it's not something that is really that alien to us because it could happen at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of a trite statement. I've heard a lot of it, but it's true. You know, rents are zipping up there.
I know, my rent just got raised myself.
Right. You know, I mean, it's, and she knows that. And I think it's not that the problem comes when behavior that is not criminal is made criminal in order to kind of cater to the fears of people that they just don't want these, you know, they don't want people who look poor on the sidewalk at all in that area. Now, she wasn't saying that, you know, she didn't say that's what she wanted. And the problem, though, is I think politicians jump into the gap and assume that that somehow is a solution, that it, make it illegal. In Santa Cruz, for instance, it was the first town in California to make it illegal to peacefully ask for a dime after dark. I mean, or to ask for a dime at any time from a seated position from downtown, or to ask for a dime if you're with somebody else in a seated position, or not even standing. I mean, there's a whole series of crazy downtown ordinances that were passed under the Coonerty-Rodkin Council back in 1994, when Neil Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, was the, you know, he was the mayor the year before, and then he became the lead downtown association kind of person who pushed for these new anti-homeless laws, and that's what they were. They were against street people and homeless people.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of times they, you know, people say, oh, okay, we'll get all the homeless out of downtown Santa Cruz, but they're still going to be homeless, you know, even if you, you know, run them out, but, you know, they're, you know, that's not a solution to the problem by any means. It's just
no.
Like,
well, she didn't talk about a solution to the problem, and in a way, I'm not bold enough to talk about a solution, though. It seems to me things like jobs and housing that's decently priced and some fundamental changes in social priorities might be a good first step. I don't know what the solutions are. I do know that while we're here in the midst of the problem, we want to make sure that everybody retains basic civil rights, like the right to sleep, the right to be in public spaces without being arrested, the right to be treated fairly and courteously by police officers, things of that sort.
Yes, with dignity and respect.
Yes.
Because, like you said, you never know when it could happen to you yourself.
Sure. And it's just, it's not conducive to a good social order to have police, you know, abusing one class of people. Of course, it's traditional. It's been happening for decades and
yeah.
generations. You know, that's what, unfortunately, is the way of the world. But it's time to change the way of the world. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, not at all. I was just saying that, like I said, if the woman's having a, you know, with her children, I think maybe educating the children a little more would be a better thing than sheltering them more by never bringing them downtown and things like that.
Sure.
Well, okay.
Hey, thank you, Hans.
All right, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Keep up the good work.
Well, yeah, good active listeners out there, and it looks like the phone is giving us a real active day.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I'd like to know how come Butch Baker is so special that people that he doesn't even know would just cover up for him? Or did he know these people?
We're talking about the people who accused him back in 1992?
No, the people that covered up for him, the DA or whoever it was.
The police force?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's often said that, you know, the blue coat of silence is something very real. It's certainly, we've seen it in other police departments, like in Los Angeles, where you have police officers protecting each other because they're afraid that if they admit to one police officer's problems or malfeasance, that tends to reflect on the, you know, the value or the reputation of the entire department. So that's part of the rationale. And the other rationale is that the police department wants to handle these things within its own confines. I don't think they like the idea of critics outside the police department bringing these issues in because it cuts into their power.
Okay. Well, what happens if someone is paid or is asked or is coerced to saying that someone did something to them, such as sexual harassment, rape, etc.?
I think we would both agree that's wrong.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
Wow. Please call in and join us, and the number here is 427-3772.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Bernard.
Hi, Bernard.
Oh, I just wanted to give you a variety of responses here, you know, on the woman, you know, that called. And she can't really handle, you know, going downtown, and, you know, with her children. And I've had no problem with my wife and child. We've never been harassed. We're asked by homeless people for money sometimes, but they've never harassed us. And I'd like to tell that woman, you know, that treating, you know, teaching her children about diversity, that there's all kinds of different people, will have an effect of making your own children feel more healthy if they're allowed to see a different type of human beings. We're just not all one tree. There's just many different trees, and we all have to learn how to treat each other with respect, and I know that that's very difficult. Which leads me, you know, to my second thing about Sergeant Baker. I normally don't like to say something nice, you know, about police people. I personally hate them as a class. But in terms of Sergeant Baker, the intimate experience I've had with him is only one time, and that was at the public forum that we were, you know, last week. And he was watching me and my son, you know, crawl over the steps, and we were walking all over the place. My son is about 2.5 months, and Sergeant Baker was looking at us, you know, and he was looking with a lot of love. You know, I felt a lot of love coming from that man, you know, just, you know, within the moments. It was momentary, and it felt really good. And, you know, I can't say anything about, you know, his accusations and all his history. I mean, that's another subject. But in that one moment, I felt that man's love. And I, you know, kind of shake when I have to say something nice like that about a policeman. But it was really true in this case.
No, I see nothing wrong with giving a police officer her his due. I've filed commendations about police officers when they've acted in ways that have been particularly helpful. I think that you have to, if you're going to file a complaint, you've also got to be prepared to file a commendation, you know.
Thank you, Robert.
Sure, thank you
for saying that.
Sure.
And then, finally, I just wanted to let you know, that the committee for the repeal of the sleeping ban has picked up two additional endorsements. The first endorsement has come from the Bike Co-op. That's a university campus organization. And the second endorsement has now come from the UFW Student Committee.
Yeah, the farm workers.
Right. So I just want to let you know that we are gaining momentum and support, and letters and messages to City Hall will be coming from those two organizations.
That's wonderful, Bernard.
Thank you, and the struggle continues.
Thanks, Bernard.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And our phone lines are open at 427-3772. The sleeping ban sections of the camping ban have long been a matter of great concern to me. It makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside after 11 or to cover up with blankets if you're considering the blanket ban section of the camping ordinance. And that ordinance hopefully is up for some real serious revisions on Monday. That's tomorrow at 4 o'clock on the second floor of the library, where the task force, Council Members Crone, Sugar, and Mayor Byers, will be meeting at a public meeting to discuss language changes. Now, various homeless people and others have asked me, is the mayor serious? Is she for real? Or is this some sort of token gesture that isn't being engaged in? There'll be no real changes. And my answer is, I don't know. But by God, we're going to know by tomorrow. Because tomorrow, the rubber will meet the road here, and we'll find out what's happening.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I'm the person that you had on before.
Oh, yes, welcome back.
And I don't appreciate being called a liar. I know what happened. I have a true compassion for homeless people. But I think the truly homeless people aren't, they're different than the ones downtown. And, you know, I am teaching my kids to respect them. And we give whenever we can, and Christmas we always adopt the families, and it's just, I don't like to be called that, and I am compassionate, and it's truly a...
Well, I want to say, first of all, I appreciate your calling back. It takes, it takes courage to get into the rough and tumble of really responding to heated concerns, and, there are strong feelings on all sides of this issue. And I think it's commendable that you speak up, and I think that's really what I encourage people to do. If you feel you're being falsely characterized, it's important to say so, just as I encourage homeless people when they're harassed to stand up and say, no, that's wrong, I don't think it's appropriate that you do this.
I'm just telling you from a mother standpoint, the kids don't like to go downtown. And
how old are your children?
They're 11 and 7.
And have you've lived all your life in Santa Cruz?
What?
You've lived all your life in Santa Cruz?
No, for 12 years.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? I like downtown. I love the spirit of downtown. But it's just, if the kids don't want to go down there, if they feel threatened, that, it's not my place
to put
them.
You don't want to force people to go where they feel threatened.
Right.
There's no question about that. Can you kind of link this to any particular one or two incidents where you feel this attitude happened?
She's going to call me a liar because if I...
You're talking to me.
I don't really want to put it to a person and stuff. I really don't, okay? Because I feel sorry for those people. I truly do. But...
Well, you have a right to... Remember, again, we're talking about a whole different bunch of individuals. And so if one person mistreats or...
Yeah, I know.
There's nothing wrong with
that. Bad egg in every,
Sure, there's nothing wrong. But what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with saying... That here on this occasion, this person acted like a real cretin,
right.
Like a real bum.
Hopefully, I'll be.